Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Family of Faith, a Faith Bible Church podcast about God's design for the family, with your host and pastor of Family Ministries, Paul Funchess.
Hey, this is Family of Faith, a podcast by Faith Bible for Faith Bible, and we are in part two this week, part two of our financial talk, our talk on finances and how the gospel transforms our finances, our use of our material goods. God is the owner of all things, and we are his stewards. We are stewards of all that he has given us, whether he's given us much or given us little. You know, personally, he gave me really great looks, and I am a steward of those looks, and I have failed. I think I failed. I've let myself go, Seth. I've let myself go. Anyway, we're talking about finances. We're not talking about me. So we have Toby and Jenny here again to talk through the practical. Last week, we talked about some of the big picture scriptural principles, ownership and stewardship, and how the gospel really does affect the way we should approach our material possessions. And this week, we wanted to get into some of the practical, not that we can get into all the weeds, right? We can't get into every single question. If you have questions about any of these things, Toby and Jenny would love to talk to you.
Absolutely.
Okay.
We would love to.
Yeah, they would love to talk to you about the questions that you have and the class, which we're going to offer beginning October 6th, during the first service on Sunday. And you can register for that class by going to fbchurch.org/classes. And again, that starts on October 6th during first hour. And that class lasts for 4 weeks. So it'll be basically the month of October. You're going to be in that class. Sign up for that class if you have an opportunity. And they would love to see you in the class. And how many people typically take the class at one time? Do you have a limit or anything?
No, no limit. It really varies. We've had classes with four people in it, and the last class we had probably 25. So it all just depends on who's interested and how well it fits into their schedules. So,
well, we want to get in practical. So Toby or Jenny, either one can lead. Give me some of the practical outworkings. What are the questions that people really need to be dealing with as they're thinking about how to do this practically, how to be good stewards of what God owns?
Yeah. When it comes to the practical aspects of personal finance and stewardship, you really can't get away from the fact that the budget is really kind of the cornerstone. To be successful in personal finances, it's essentially almost impossible to do it without a good budget. And the budget has a lot of purposes, a lot of value to it. It's probably good to clarify exactly what a budget is, because at the beginning of most classes, we ask people if they have a budget. And it's not uncommon for people to come back and say, oh yeah, I go back and review my bank account spending each month. Looking at what you spent is very different from budgeting it out and controlling your spending by assigning values to it before you go and spend that money. So just a little clarification as to what a budget is. The reason that the budget is so essential is because the budget is the way by which you get to really take control of your spending. It's where you tell your money what you're going to do, and you set guidelines and kind of guardrails for what you're going to do financially throughout the month. Practically speaking, it's important to refresh it regularly because things change month to month. So the budget that you have this month may not be the exact same budget that you have next month. So kind of staying on top of it and refreshing it is important. There's also a ton of value, especially as a couple, in going through a budget. One, a budget is really a reflection of who you are and what your values are as a family. So when you sit down and put together a budget, that's when you and your spouse, or if you're an individual, that's where you as a person get to decide what is important to me and how much am I going to assign to each of these categories so that it accurately reflects who I want to be as a person and where I spend my money. So there's a tremendous amount of value in doing that as a couple, because you really get to see into kind of the inner priorities and the inner workings of your spouse as you talk through money. I mean, it's really amazing, as you have to set numbers to categories, how much detail you get to see about the priorities of a spouse and where you maybe differ and priorities, and working through that can be tremendously valuable. But it's really the way by which you get to decide how you want to spend your money and what you want that value system of your family to look like, and then put that into practice.
In our home, a little transparency into the Rainbow Home, both of us at different times have done the budget. So Toby might work on it for a while, or I might do it. Oftentimes, or most of the time, we always come together to really come to unity on how the budget actually will flesh itself out that month. However, sometimes he does it, sometimes I do it. A little transparency is, he just recently said to me, you know, I'm having a hard time keeping up with it. Will you take it back over? So that's how in our home it works. I'll then take it on, paying the bills and making sure that the budget is intact. And as I need to flesh that out, we will get together. We'll sit down and we will make sure that we're together on that.
Right.
It really is oftentimes that nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to live by it. It puts you in a box. We've heard that before. I don't want a budget. It puts me in the box. I don't want to have limits to what I do. And essentially it is what the budget does. It does put you in kind of some spending categories. And here's what you have determined ahead of time, what that month is going to look like. Obviously, things change and emergencies come up or whatnot, but here is our plan for the month. So that's essentially what a budget is. And hopefully at the end, when you've done your budget and put it all down on paper or spreadsheet or on your iPad or whatever it is, you get down to zero. So you have categorized every dollar that is coming in for income that month, and you've given it a name and a placeholder, and that's what you live by. And it is a document to live by essentially for the month.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's also important to understand if you haven't done a budget before, when you put together your first budget, just know it's not going to work. I mean, you will get into the month and you will realize, that is not nearly enough for groceries, or, you know, so just understand that, it's okay. And you'll have to work through it. It usually takes 3 or 4 months to really kind of get into a groove with the budget. So don't be disheartened if your first budget is way off, because it does take some time, and you'll get there. It just takes a little bit of perseverance.
You know what I've run into with families is there's one person who's a spender carelessly or spontaneously, and the other person's really wants to be exact. Mm-hmm. You know, they're usually, it almost always works where you have two people of completely opposite. God is really good and gracious to put us with people who will grow us the most. I mean, really, seriously. And not everybody marries another accountant, right? we need to be real with that. So maybe the husband is really controlling with the budget. He wants to make sure where every dime goes, and the wife is not so careful with the budget, or vice versa, one way or the other. What kind of advice practically would you have? Maybe it's like one spouse wants to have the budget and another spouse doesn't want the budget. So how would you walk them through that?
Well, oftentimes if there are issues in a marriage, it will bubble up in the form of money, right? And so we see that oftentimes problems in a marriage will come up as finances. So sometimes there's, first things first, we got to deal with some of, you know, are you loving each other well? Are you deferring to one another? Are you looking out for the ways of your household first and foremost? But if you have one person that's a little bit more inclined to maybe administration or organization, they have, and it doesn't matter if it's husband, wife, maybe you're single and you don't have that inclination, you need to go and seek somebody out that does so that they can help you. Just to put it down on paper. And then what it does for a marriage is it makes you both come to the table and say, okay, this is what I have established for our categories. What do you think? And how can we come to an agreement on that? So if one is uber controlling without any input from their spouse, then that's where the issue needs.
That's not good.
No, that's not good. So that's where the problems are created, not necessarily in the budget.
Right.
So
absolutely.
Getting those things fleshed out first, and then deferring to one another, making sure that your priorities are the same. Maybe one is complaining, I don't have enough money for the kids' clothes. Okay, then we need to figure out what is our priority here, and dealing with that first and foremost. But coming together and being on the same page for the sake of the marriage and for the sake of the finances is key. And it will open up communication. And that's why it might get messy in the beginning, but the more you work at it, the more you are loving and deferring to one another, the better it will become.
And if this has been a sore spot for you, and a lot of couples, especially if they've been married for any length of time at all, this is a sore spot. They've had this conversation before. It has not gone well. Or it is a place where you really clearly see a sin struggle of one of the, or both of the spouses, mm-hmm. and they just don't really want to talk through it. It'd be really good to have some other couple come alongside you or a counselor come alongside you mm-hmm. and help you walk through this. Because like you said, Jenny, it's not really a money issue. Mm-hmm. It's a heart issue. And money is where it's being revealed. Right. And our desire to control, find security in money. That's never going to satisfy us. So we want to deal with that heart issue. So it might be good to have an older couple. Guess what? They've probably gone through very similar things. That's the beauty of it is mm-hmm. This is not unique. You are not alone. We all deal with this on some level. So it'd be good to have an older couple walk alongside you with this.
Yeah. You don't want to go to your best friend necessarily and say, will you help me with this? You want somebody that has been there, tried and true, an older couple that is managing well and has done this well and has been tested over time, not just anybody necessarily.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Seek wise counsel. Yeah. Right. And accountability through them. That's essential.
And if you don't know anybody, or if you don't feel like you have that person, come talk to one of us and we will point you in the direction of someone who could be that wise counselor for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for a time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's good.
Practically speaking with the budget, and even speaking to some of the challenges that people may have with spending, I mean, having a spender in the house is a normal thing. Even when you have two accountants that married each other.
Yes, we're very different.
You might still have a spender who likes to say,
maybe some, but
it was on sale. I couldn't pass on that. So, you know, sometimes you have to take practical actions. You know, we talk about using cash a lot because cash is one of those things where there's built-in accountability. If one or both of you have issues with spending, going to a cash budget makes it so that once the money's gone, you have to stop spending. So there are some practical things you can do to help limit that. But I would fully affirm that that most of those issues are a heart issue. And that's why when Jen and I first started into this and we started doing financial counseling, we quickly realized that we needed to go to the counseling classes because the financial counseling that we were doing was most of the time marriage counseling. I mean, it was other heart issues that were just showing themselves in the finances. Yeah. So absolutely a lot of, you know, most of those issues come down to heart issues of selfishness or pride. So seek help, get accountability, and that's tremendously valuable.
Yeah.
These are also very important principles if you have children, to teach them young, teach them early. And one practical thing that Toby and I did when our girls were little is we took Monopoly money, and this is Dad's salary. And then we took out money for taxes, and we took out money for, here's what we've set aside and allotted in our cash, my cash envelope, for food, for clothing, for entertainment. Here's what we spend on utilities. And so they got to see practically.
That's good.
Where the money goes, because oftentimes our kids are, you know, they just think it's infinite when money is finite. And so they saw how finite the money was and where it went. Whether they remember the ins and outs of it now, they probably will chuckle and say they remember the actual event where we did that.
Yeah.
But practically speaking, to teach that to your kids very early on, that there is something called a budget. And when the money is gone, it is gone. And you can't overspend in that way. You can, but you get yourself in much, much more trouble when you do that. So that's another great practical tip for kids and budgeting.
That's a great tip. Mm-hmm. I haven't ever thought about that. We're going to do that. That's good.
And I think it's also important, speaking of children, I think it's good for kids to know that you have a budget, that there is some structure there. And I think it's probably an underused aspect of parenting to be willing to tell kids, we don't have the money for that. I mean, I think there's a lot of value in kids understanding that money is finite and that that we can't just have everything there. Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, as a dad, you don't want to say, we don't have the money for that, because you want to be a good provider and you want to be able to give your kids and your family all the things that they desire. But there's a lot of good in saying no. And we talk in the class a lot about opportunity cost. And that's something we've also tried to teach our kids, is that whenever you spend money or use resources, you have to consider what opportunities in the future you may be giving up by making that decision today. Yeah. So it may be as simple as, okay, if we go out to lunch after church, that means that we don't get to go do that other thing that we were planning. You know, we don't get to go to the baseball game this weekend, or we don't get to go out to dinner for whatever reason. And so it's good for them to start to understand that, okay, if we make this decision now, there are implications about what opportunities come in the future. And those may be known or unknown. Sometimes we make a decision now, and then something comes up that we never even realized was going to come up, and we can't do it because we've used those funds. So that idea of opportunity cost is really important in general, but then with kids, it's good to start to instill that early on.
That's really good. Yeah, that's really helpful.
We had, it was a fail on my part, and then, but it, I think it was a win overall. And when I carried the cash in my wallet, I had a category, this was years ago, for clothing. And Toby needed some pants. And I said, okay, great. We've got some money in the clothing budget. Let's pack up the kids and go to the mall, which with little kids in the mall, you know, and Toby shopping for pants, you know, which he hates anyway. So
we get
the pants, we get to the checkout. This is an absolute true story. I realized I had spent the clothing budget on the kids and there was no money in the envelope. And we're standing there with three little kids. And we had to walk away. There was no money. And so we had to put the pants back. Probably waited till next month. The next month, had clothing money again. Mm. Yeah. Left the mall with no pants.
Well, except for the pants he had on.
Pants when we got there. Yeah. But he didn't have a new pair of dress pair pants of for work.
And it was, I mean, it was really a learning opportunity for the kids is how we used it. Because, I mean, technically, we had funds to buy new pants if we wanted to, but we wanted to show them that, look, we came to spend it. We had already spent it, which means we don't get to get it. And so it was a good opportunity to show them, you know, to stay within that framework of the budget that you set out. So,
what about the people? Okay, this is really helpful for me personally. I am the dad who really loves to have fun with his kids. Mm-hmm. Okay, so. Like, it doesn't take much. I'm going to take him to the movies or I'm going to, you know, whatever. What do you say to the dad who's like, but that's a little rigid. I want to have fun with my kids. I want to teach them that I want to use my money to show them how much I love them and enjoy them. There's a balance with that, right? Yeah. I'm that dad, but sometimes I'm that dad too much, right? It's more about me making my kids respond a certain way to me. And it's really not about me trying to teach them how much I love them or show them how much I love them. So what do you say to a dad like that?
Yeah, no, that's great. I would say my advice would be to use the budget and that time that we talked about with your spouse to really kind of hash that out. If that's a priority, if that's something that you desire and that you seek out and that you find a lot of joy in, then absolutely you should be able to make that happen.
Yeah.
Putting those funds in the budget to make sure you've got budget to do that is outstanding, but also then balancing that against the wisdom of your spouse who can say, okay, that's probably a little bit much for
three
that.
Three movies in 1 week.
Yeah, three movies. There aren't that many movies that come out that good.
You know? So yeah, so using your spouse to help balance out, okay, what's appropriate? What's an amount of money that will allow me to do some of those fun things with the kids?
Yeah.
But then also an amount that's not so large that you can just throw money at fun.
Right.
Where
right.
at some point you can do those things, but then at some point in the months or the weeks, you might have to say, okay, I want to do something fun, but the money's gone. So I'm going to have to get creative and I'm going to have to find something to go do with them that's not going to cost me.
Free fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Free fun is actually more fun than costly fun.
I do like
a lot
free
of
fun.
Times. Free fun, there's a lot of things to be done for free. So that's good stuff. So budgeting, obviously, huge foundational principle for the practical part of it. We all need to be budgeting on some level. Let me ask you this. Are there any particularly helpful resources to use for that? Like, are there online resources, ways to, or do you do all this in spreadsheets? I mean, any practical pieces for that, for people that don't really have much experience?
Sure. And that's a pretty common question that we get is what's the best tool for that?
Right.
And our answer is really, it really depends on who you are as a person and what you like. We use spreadsheets, you know, accountants, we're just spreadsheet driven. Yeah. But we know there are a lot of apps, phone apps that help track money and track spending that you can do budgeting on. A lot of people use Mint. So there's several different apps and different tools that you can use as long as it kind of meets your need and your technology appetite. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of people are more tech savvy, and so they like some of the apps and the tools. And some people are more simple. They may want to sit down with a piece of ledger paper and write it all out.
Yeah.
As technologically savvy as we are, we are fairly archaic, and we do a spreadsheet and cash.
Yeah.
And that is how we found it is very simple. It's not very cumbersome, but it is the very best way we found to control spending.
Yeah. And not, you know, a lot of times you have one spouse that's technologically mm-hmm. savvy and the other one's not, or, you know, and sometimes it's better if you do something that's easier for both of you mm-hmm. to do. The other question I had, because you mentioned that you swap sometimes responsibility for mm-hmm. it. Any thought on that? I think sometimes guys particularly think that, well, I'm the leader, I'm supposed to take care of this. Mm-hmm. Even some of the old school guys are like, hey, if you're a man, you should be leading in this way. It's a disastrous thing for me to take care of anything with numbers. It's like Chinese. I can't read numbers. So my wife handles all of the financial. I think I've said that before. What wisdom would you give on that? If a guy comes and he really feels like this is part of his role as a man.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think, you know, Jen addressed it a little bit earlier is, you know, oftentimes couples have one person who is more capable and more bent towards numbers and structure. Right. And I think it's absolutely no matter which side of the fence that falls on, that it's okay for that person to manage the practical aspects of the budget. As a man and a leader in the household, I absolutely think you need to be engaged in the budgeting process.
Yeah, that's
cool. You need to have an opinion, you know, not that you throw aside your wife's opinion, but you need to sit down and actively engage with her in a conversation about what that budget should look like. And that's really how you fulfill your role in leading in finances, is being actively engaged as you decide what that budget should look like. The practical aspects of how that plays out through the month, that really can go to whoever is more skilled in that. But that leadership and the active engagement in the budget is really what you would want from a leader in the household.
And just because a man may not be doing the administrative side or whatever, it does not in any way abdicate responsibility for the household funds. And we have seen that before too. So how it practically works out, regardless, still, the responsibility still lands there. And it almost forces two people to come together and communicate.
Communicate.
You cannot communicate too much.
Yeah. You cannot over communicate.
No.
So that's good. I said it in our last podcast, but money and sex, those are the two things. If you want to talk about lack of communication, mm-hmm. those are the two things couples are not talking about. They don't talk about very much. So anyway, there's something going on there with those two areas and the communication that comes out of, or the lack of communication that comes out of those two areas. So anyway, let's continue with some practical. Now you have a list of things practically, just kind of step through some of those things that couples, families really need to think about.
Sure. On the practical level, I mean, there's a lot of things we could touch on, but we'll try to keep it to kind of the key elements. One of the first ones that I would mention is an emergency fund. That's really an essential aspect of finances. You really need to have some funds set aside for when emergencies happen. The reality is that unexpected events are really, they don't exist because we know that emergencies are going to happen. So nothing should really catch us off guard. We know a car is going to break down. We know there's going to be medical bills. So an emergency fund sets us up to be able to deal with those things because we know that they're coming. I mean, one of my favorite stories in the Bible is a perfect example of the emergency fund, and that is Joseph. You know, when he was in Egypt, he was set up as a leader, and he became aware through the dream that there was going to be years of plenty followed by years of famine. And so he essentially set up an emergency fund by saving while the times were good, knowing that there were going to be bad times coming. And he saved not only Egypt, but his own family and a lot of the known world at that time. So, you know, that's a great principle for us to look at is when times are good and the funds are available, you need to be setting aside for those times when things are not going to be as favorable so that you're prepared. And it's not just a practical thing. Part of the challenge of finances is that, as I mentioned before, it's very emotional. It's easy to get frustrated and kind of give up and then go back into bad habits. And emergencies are one of those things that can do that. When you're unprepared for an emergency financially, it turns it from a life emergency to a life and financial emergency, which can often cause you to want to just kind of give in and go back into bad habits and spend and do things the wrong way. Yeah. So having that emergency fund helps, like a car breaking down, instead of being a family emergency and a financial emergency, you can just deal with the family aspect of, okay, how are we going to get people where they need to go for now.
Yeah. Right.
So it's important to help emotionally and spiritually so that those emergencies don't kind of set us off down the wrong road.
And that's not, you're not talking about savings accounts.
No, that would be kind of separate from a normal savings account. Typically when we talk about a savings account, we're talking about funds that you set aside for a specific purpose, saving up to buy a car, saving up for a vacation, those kinds of things.
Right.
An emergency fund is separate funds set aside specifically to deal with trouble that comes.
Yeah. I see a lot of people that use those savings accounts and they become the emergency funds because they haven't set up that extra fund or whatever.
Right.
And
right.
Then your savings are depleted and all that. So that's good. Yeah.
There's no rule that says you have to segregate it from your normal savings, but we recommend that you do so that it's not tempting to...
It's going
to
get absorbed into the other. Yeah.
So we typically encourage people, if they want an emergency fund, because an emergency fund, you really are not... It's not going to be an account that you're going to want to get into very often. I mean, typically it's going to be only a few times a year you're going to have to dip into that fund. So having those funds separated from your normal savings, and oftentimes we recommend like a money market fund because that will earn a little bit of interest. But you still have access to that cash without any penalties if you're not getting into it too often. So
it is not meant to be an investment in any way, shape, or form. It is meant to be there for insurance for when something goes wrong. So sometimes people mistake those. They want to put it in something that's going to make them a whole lot of money, but it you need to be able to get at it quickly when an emergency arises.
Yeah. What if somebody's not making much money? I mean, they are... And it's not like they're trying to live at a higher standard of living. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're working a minimum wage job or they've been put into a situation by a husband that's left them or by a serious medical situation, circumstance, where, I mean, they are making enough money to pay the bills. Their priorities are good. Mm-hmm. And truthfully, they just can't save money on a month-to-month basis. And so when we talk about this kind of stuff, I think we do have some of those people in our midst. We have more of those than we'd, I think, you know, think sometimes. But what do you say to those people who can't save regularly, let alone an emergency fund for things that will come up?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. And there are definitely people, you know, in both in this church and, you know, our spheres of influence who do live paycheck to paycheck where they do, even though they're responsible in their spending, they just don't have the income to be able to set money aside. And so I guess my advice would be a couple fold. One would be, that's okay. If you're being diligent in the way that you manage your finances and you don't have the money to set aside into savings, you can only do what you can do. And so that's okay. There are some practical things that we've seen individuals do where they maybe don't have the income to be able to put together an emergency fund. And so they've done things like have a garage sale and sell off some things that they realize they don't need anymore to be able to put a little bit of money into a savings account for an emergency fund. You know, those people may already have a second job. We've seen people get a second job for a period of time to be able to build up a little bit to set aside. So there are some things that you can do. But again, if you're really being diligent and if you're really being a good steward of what you've been given, then you may just be in a circumstance where you can't set aside money. I would say in that circumstance also that's part of the reason that the church is here. You know, the church
Absolutely.
Is here for those who are being responsible and are just in a place where an emergency comes up and they don't have the funds to deal with it. We absolutely, as a church, have funds available for those who have that need. And so remember that, you know, continue to be a good steward, be responsible, but the church is here for you and will absolutely step in and help as needed.
Right. And give to that care fund. If you mm-hmm. are a member or if you're a part of our church, you know, and you make a good income, you know, you need to be saving, you need to be putting money into an emergency fund, but you also need to be generous in your giving to the care fund. Mm-hmm. Or this just popped in my head as you were talking, why not even have another fund that you set up for yourself, mm-hmm. another type of savings where it's a gift type of mm-hmm. savings, you know? Yeah. I have my emergency fund and then I have my fund that I'm just going to bless somebody and I'm praying about who I'm going to bless with this money, yeah. you know, because I have some left over and that I want to bless people with what I have. So,
yeah.
You know, that would be a huge blessing yeah. to people.
Absolutely. I know we may get into some of that in the giving and investing part,
yeah.
but
right.
We have seen people who set aside funds specifically so that they have money available. So when they hear of somebody
yeah.
who is struggling, you know, lost a job or, you know, or lost a spouse, they're able to come alongside and help pay a utility bill or buy groceries and deliver them anonymously. So, it is kind of a neat thing that you can do. If you are intentional about setting aside funds for those things.
So. That's good.
I think key is be faithful what God has given you and don't worry about what you don't have. Worry about what is in front of you, how you're managing it and being faithful that way. And like Toby said and what we've said, the body of Christ can come around you, but don't be discouraged in being faithful with what is in front of you.
That's good. All right, moving on with some practical.
Another practical aspect, insurance is important. There's a lot of gory details with insurance that we don't want to go into, but ultimately, insurance is a way that our country and our government has established for us to protect ourselves against major emergencies. So whether it's medical insurance, car insurance, long and short-term disability, life insurance, those are all things that we can spend a little bit of money now to protect us against that big event that could potentially have catastrophic impacts on finances. So, so it's really important to kind of understand the ins and outs of insurance, make sure your coverages, that you have both the right type and the amounts of coverages, because it is a really important step in finances to help hedge against some of those major emergencies. So it helps offset the emergency fund. So you're not having to dip into it so often.
One of the other things, Toby, that I know a lot of people are wondering about is debt. And, you know, you've heard people say there's good debt, there's bad debt. What is a Christian's responsibility? What is our approach and view of debt? Give us a little bit of help with debt.
Debt. So debt is one of the biggest challenges that people have in finances. We have a lot of people come to us and with the problem that they have gotten themselves into debt and they're having a hard time getting themselves out. There are a lot of different aspects to debt and everybody's situation is unique. I think the one thing that we always come back to when we're talking about debt is there are only two variables when you want to look at getting out of debt. If you are in debt and you want to pay against that debt to get it out, there are only two variables that you can influence. One is the amount of income that you have coming in and the amount of expense that's going out. So if you want to have more money to put onto debt to try to get out of debt, you either need to increase your income or reduce your expenses. There's really no other options. And so attacking debt, there's a lot of different practical ways you can do that. Many people would recommend starting with the smallest debt, pay it off, and then roll that payment and your additional payment onto the next small debt, pay that one off, and then they call it the snowball because it just kind of starts to grow as you pay off those debts.
Yeah.
The big advantage to that is that you see progress. And like I said, you know, finances are very emotional. And when you're trying to pay off debt, it's easy to get frustrated and feel like you're not gaining any ground and then fall back into your old habits and spending. So that snowball does help you feel like you're gaining some ground as you see those small debts get paid off and work towards your larger debt. One of the other ways that we've seen that I don't have a problem with is, and most people ask why we don't recommend this more, and that's take the debt that has the highest interest rate and start paying on that first. You know, as an accountant, that makes the most sense. And if you have the moxie and the discipline to do that, I think that's a great way to do it. Again, the challenge is it may take a while if that's a big debt to pay it off and you may not feel like or see the progress that you would like. And you don't want to get frustrated and fall back into old habits. So that is, practically speaking, a great way to approach it. You just need to be able to be committed to it and stick to it if you want to make that way work.
I think it's important to say that debt is, being in debt is not a sin. Necessarily, there are many different aspects to that, and there's many different opinions about that. One reality that we have seen and have witnessed over and over is debt is, it'll shackle you. And so there's many different things when you talk about opportunity costs and that sort of thing. When you think about going into debt or whatever, that going into debt will have a direct impact of your opportunities going forward, because you become, as Proverbs said, you will become a slave of the lender. Mm-hmm. And that will have to become your first priority. So there are many things to think through as you are going out and borrowing money. One thing that we've seen in the younger generation is we've been in contact with more and more of them coming to us, is they're more and more comfortable with being in debt and being in a lot of debt. So some of it is a mindset of it's just becoming normal in our culture to have debt as a tool. And so thinking through the implications of what does it mean to be in debt? What is it that you're borrowing for? There's definitely different types of debt that you can be in, some better, some terrible. And thinking about debt, not from a biblical standpoint, is there are many warnings about being in debt, not necessarily a sin, but thinking through what are the opportunity costs here that I'm giving up because I'm essentially shackled to this.
Yeah, and we have seen some really sad circumstances where young couples have put themselves into significant student debt, and they right. come out of college and desire to go to the missions field, and they can't do it because they have so much student debt that financially it's just not a viable option. So it's really sad to see those circumstances where somebody's heart is longing for ministry and for service and to see the gospel go out, and to see practical applications of their personal finances preclude them from being able to do that. So like Jen said, debt is not a sin, but the Bible doesn't have anything good to say about it. And it definitely can be an inhibitor from you being able to serve and minister in the way that you want, because you're shackled by the debts that you put yourself into.
And debt too. I mean, debt is the way we get what we want a lot of times mm-hmm. without the money for it. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it again reveals our heart. You know, we're wanting to please ourselves or wanting to find security, our identity in something that we can't afford. And so we go into debt to get it. Parents, and Toby just said something about college. You know, not every person has to go to college. I think that's something mm-hmm. that's really important. A lot of parents already know that, but parents ought to be counseling their kids as they start thinking through college and how to pay for it. You don't want your kids to go through college and be loaded down with a mountain of debt. Right. That's not wise. So, and involving other counselors too, you know, mm-hmm. thinking through what your options might be. So,
yeah, absolutely. College is not a requirement. Right. You know, there are some great things that come with schooling, but, there are many ways to even go through college, that are much less financially burdening. You know, a couple of years at a community college to get the essential right. classes out of the way before you move to a different right. college. Yeah. And even trade school. We have a nephew who is going into the trades, and that's a great option. You know, it's a great way to earn income and have a good, solid, dependable job. Yeah. And that doesn't require 4 years of schooling and a bunch of debt that goes along with it.
Yeah, but you know how that goes. You know how that goes when parents tell kids that, you know, because they see all their friends going away to college mm-hmm. or they want to go and have that college experience. Yes. And going to community college is not what they want to hear. That's where you've got to be the parent a little bit
yeah.
and really help your kids think through these things and make hard decisions yeah. for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've had that conversation in our class before where, you know, we've kind of given that warning, you know, because a lot of kids want to go to a school because they want to say they graduated from that school or yeah. they want that college experience yeah. from that school.
Yeah.
And the reality is that should not be the motivation behind it.
Why you make that decision.
Especially if yeah. it's going to come with a significant financial burden.
Right. Hard decisions. That's not easy to have a conversation. Yeah. You know, it's easy to say that outside looking in.
Well, We're on the eve of having to have those conversations. Yeah. Yeah. And so I think we just had this conversation in the car on the way here.
There you go. So. There you go. Anybody with kids this age, young adults in their home, they're having these kind of conversations. Yep. So, well, you know, we've been talking about a lot of good things and there's just so much more to talk about. And so we were originally, I think, thinking about just doing two podcasts, but it just seems like we need to do a third because of time and all of that. So if that's okay, we'll just continue this conversation and make it a different or a third podcast, and we'll just do three. So thanks for joining us this week. I will see you again next week as we continue this conversation on being good stewards of what God owns.
Thanks for listening to Family of Faith. This podcast is a production of Family Ministries at Faith Bible Church in Spokane, Washington. Feel free to share. We only ask that you do not alter the content in any way and that you do not charge for it. Visit us at fbchurch.org for more resources, articles, and information about our ministries.